Hello, hockey fans. It is Tuesday, February 13th, 2018, and welcome to From the Press Box, your weekly podcast here at AHL Report, hosted by yours truly, the lead correspondent at the AHL Report, and co-hosted every week, of course, by my fabulous co-host, the editor-in-chief and founder of Rocket Sports Media, Mr. Rick Stevens.
Glad to be here. Well, no, my tagline is thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled to be here again this week. Mm-hmm.
Thrilled. That's good. We're glad to hear that. And we're thrilled to have all of our listeners along as well. We have a stacked show for you today, so we're going to get right to things. We're going to run down. We had a very busy week here at the AHL Report last week as far as the Laval Rocket goes. Rick and I were on the road covering Laval in Binghamton, Utica, and Syracuse last week. So we have a lot to review as far as that's concerned, as well as some exclusive audio with players and coach Sylvain Lefebvre from when we spoke with them after each game. We have a special guest today, Rick, as well.
We do.
Our friend and colleague and fantastic staff writer, Mr. Joseph Whalen, is going to be joining us in just a bit. He is our head correspondent covering the Belleville Senators for the AHL Report this year. And so with Belleville and Laval going head-to-head again tomorrow night, Joseph's going to give us a little preview of what to expect and how the lineups changed and just how Belleville's been doing this season. So he's going to be joining us soon.
Fabulous.
Yes, fabulous. He's making his podcast debut today. It's very exciting.
Oh, wow. You nervous?
I doubt it. Mm. He knows his stuff. Then we're going to hit some AHL news. I believe Rick is taking us back to the land of Where Are They Now? So I'm sure that's going to be a journey well worth staying tuned for. And then we have a very special top five. It's Valentine's Day week. And so if we can have a top five around Groundhog's Day 2 weeks ago, I think we can have a top five for Valentine's Day. So we're going to get into some Valentine's Day things in our top five. And Joseph actually submitted his top five for this category as well. So we're going to reveal his answers along with ours. Phew. So we have a pretty busy show today.
And we have breaking news.
We have breaking news.
We have breaking news. Well, you mentioned top five. What was our top five last week?
Our top five Olympic events. Winter Olympic events.
Exactly. So
yeah.
We need an Olympic report.
Oh, are you live from South Korea to give us an Olympic update?
Yeah, that's why I'm on the phone today. That's why I had to call in.
Because they have no internet service.
That's right.
I'm so sorry. That was so wrong of me.
I'm in North Korea covering it.
You're in North Korea behind the internet barrier.
That's right. There's no internet. That's right. But looking on the medal standings, we see Norway.
Oh, is this going to be a Viking loss? So you're going to gloat at that the United States? I know what this is going to be. I know exactly. Go ahead.
We
have your moment.
Norway perennially at the top of the medal standings with 11 presently. The Netherlands, another big power in the Winter Olympics, with 10 and tied. With the Netherlands is Canada at 10 medals. Then there's Germany with 9, and we look way, way down the list and we see the United States with 6 medals.
Hmm.
So Canada has 3 gold, 4 silver, and 3 bronze for a total of 10. The United States has 3 gold, 1 silver, 2 bronze for a total of 6.
Well, you know,
and one of those gold for Canada came in the mixed pair double curling, which I don't understand for the life of me. And
well,
and
you can have that medal all day long.
Our dear friend EP is trying to explain. Do you know they have a power play? They have a power play. Getting back to hockey, they have a power play in this.
No, they don't. Nobody else can have a power play.
They do.
Anyway, do I want to know what constitutes a power play in curling?
No, it's like artificially moving rocks and placing them ahead of the end. And anyway.
And how do you get
somehow,
one of those? Does your opponent have to like hip check you into one of the ends?
Yeah, you're tripping with a broom, you know. Yeah.
All right. Well, for this week, we'll let you have your momentary Canadian glory tied for second. But, you know, there's only one gold medal that matters, and that's the one that Brian Giant is going to bring home with USA Hockey. So.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's get to the Rocket here. The last time all of us gathered here for From the Press Box, the Rocket were coming off the AHL All-Star break, and they took a trip to Toronto, and they got completely doused by the Marlies 7-1 in what Sylvain Lefebvre readily called their worst game of the season. So then they had a couple of days to practice in Toronto before they bussed to Binghamton to set up three more divisional games against Binghamton, Utica, and Syracuse. None of which are, you know, were going to be easy games, I should say. Things started off really well. If you weren't following the coverage at AHL Report all last week, things started off really well on Wednesday. Guys came up with a 4-1 win in Binghamton. It was a solid 60-minute effort by the team, especially given the fact that the lineup just keeps getting more and more depleted because of injuries and illnesses and whatnot. And we'll touch on that in a little bit. But to the extent that they had to call up two guys from Brampton on Wednesday, Matt Petgrave, a defenseman who actually ended up playing forward for a little bit as well, and Chris Levaillé, who is a forward, they both got right into the lineup on Wednesday night. And so things went well Wednesday. Then they went to Utica and Syracuse. And again, it's like this systematic wash, rinse, and repeat of where, A, they can't string together two back-to-back wins, and B, the losses, take the shellacking in Toronto out of the equation, because that was just a bad game. But their losses, and again, it happened in Utica and Syracuse, came in games where they fought hard, they played well, they remained mostly disciplined, they had good puck possession. A lot of times they were out shooting their opponents, but would just fall short of getting the win. Now in Utica, they did manage to get to overtime, and they lost it. They lost it right away on a really bad turnover in overtime. But Rick, it's got to be frustrating for them. And the thing that most of the guys and Coach Lefebvre seemed to all repeat was that they have to come to play right from the opening puck drop. That in Binghamton, they did that. In Utica and Syracuse, they had horrible first periods and then turned it around for the second and third periods, but they need to do that for the entire game.
Well, it's that playing 60 minutes thing. And as you said, in Binghamton, they came out flying. They outshot the Devils 14-4 in the first period, but they couldn't score, and they didn't score until there was 7 seconds left or thereabouts in the first period. Mark Eisenschmied got them on the board, and that kind of salvaged that first period. It could have been kind of frustrating for them. And then the second period was a complete reversal. The shots were 14-4 for Binghamton. But oddly, on those four shots, Laval scored again to go up 2-0, and this time it was Michael McCarron, really nice feed from Jordan Boucher, a shorthanded goal, and so they go out, they take a 2-0 lead. But you know, having played one of two periods rather well, and then they finished strong in that third period. And Zach Pukkala got the start, and then he was pretty good. There was times that that he didn't have a lot of action, and they played reasonably well defensively in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much in the next two games, and Charlie Lindgren was, well, that the game in Utica was a goaltending battle.
Yes,
Charlie Lindgren versus Richard Bachman, and both of them were just terrific. Goaltending battle, and as you said, went into overtime, and just an awful backhanded turnover into nowhere set up a breakaway for Utica, and that was it. The game against Syracuse was, you know, they were in that game too. There was some physical play.
There was.
Syracuse is a very physical team, and Mark Seisenschmidt just got hammered head first into the boards, and mm-hmm. David Grohl went in and took a roughing call, and it was just some penalties back and forth and some really bad defensive play in that game, in that Syracuse game.
Yeah.
And as you said, the lineup is a dog's breakfast, really, with the call-ups and the injuries and whatnot. And I thought they, given what they had to work with, I thought they played pretty well. It was just on defense, just weak. There was some bad play by at least three of the six defensemen. So.
Yeah.
But overall, you know, the guys from Brampton actually played pretty not bad at all. Luke Olivier Blaine didn't see a lot of ice time, but Matt Pecrine was thrown into every circumstance. You know, he was penalty killing, as you said. He played a couple shifts at forward. Chris LaValle, he was a lot of speed, forecheck, tenacious. He was pretty good. He fit right in. So, I don't know. Again, like the big club defense let them down on the weekend, and then that bad turnover in Utica.
Well, and it should be noted, too, that both in Binghamton and in Utica, they were playing with 11 forwards and 7 defensemen, which, you know, that's tiring on the guys. The lines are constantly changing. So not only do you have call-ups, but you have lines that are constantly changing. So I give credit to the team for hanging in as well as they did. In fact, you know, we talked to a lot of the guys, especially after the losses, about, you know, what's the feeling in the room? What do you need to keep doing going forward and things like that, you know? And I thought David Brohl actually had an interesting perspective on taking positives out of the losses that they've sustained recently, and this is what he said.
Yeah, no, it's, if we're going to lose hockey games, that's the way we're going to lose. Obviously, we'd hope to get a couple of wins last game and this game. I think we deserve better fate than that. But as I said, it's better us losing when guys are competing, blocking shots, putting everything on the line, rather than just kind of laying over and let teams roll over us.
And that's exactly what they didn't do. They weren't laying over and letting teams roll over them. In fact, you know, asked Sylvain Lefebvre pretty much the same thing. And from a coaching perspective, you know, what his message is to the guys in that room. And here's what he had to say regarding just the tone and the mood of suffering these losses in such close games.
No, I can tell that the guys are not happy with losing games, and you know, that's what you wish for, you know, for your team, and you want them to hate losing. You want them not to be scared of losing, but you know, you want them to not like losing. And, you know, I feel it. You know, the guys are working really hard. And, you know, to play 3 games in 4 nights like that, you know, with a depleted lineup, you know, with, you know, 11 forwards for 2 games, you know, I thought that we battled hard.
So, you know, players and coaches both agree that they hate losing. But if they're going to lose, they're at least satisfied with the way, for the most part, that they're performing when they're out on the ice. even though they're getting those losses.
Yeah, that's fair. And you know, for the most part, the in those three games, I don't think they were all upset about their effort against the Marlies. But following that game on the four game road trip, the rest of the three games, I think they were pretty happy overall with their effort level.
Right.
Just frustrated that it didn't come out with the points.
You know, some of the guys are really, trying to keep a positive mindset going forward and just getting through games and still trying to get wins, even though the math is really starting to get pretty dismal when it comes to, you know, the playoff push. But also the leadership core within the team is making a lot of strides and a lot of effort to keep, especially the younger players, you know, keep them focused, keep them positive. So I just want to share a few quotes. We have... First of all, from a couple of the guys who just really obviously still believe in what they can do, and that's a quote from Charlie Lindgren and a quote from Michael McCarron, and then a clip from Adam Cracknell on the things that he's trying to instill to this young group as well.
I like the guys that we brought in. I think they're hardworking players, which is good to see. So I think we got a pretty good locker room right now. So. Like I said, we got 27 games left, so we just got to worry about playing it one game at a time and just try to play as best as we can.
Like, I think you see, like, we're capable of playing really good. Like, we're capable of being a really good team, and we just got to be able to find it every night. Like,
I try to tell guys that the more you do right, the more you're going to get rewarded. So, guys have to stick with the system. You'll get rewarded. You're going to get chances, and hopefully it'll go in, and that's when your confidence starts to get going a little bit more. But playing the right way as a five-man unit, when you're out there with each other, that is when you're going to get chances and hopefully get on the score sheet.
You know, I'm really encouraged when we hear things like that. You know, Lindgren is saying, I really like the guys that we brought up. I really like what we're doing out there. We just have to keep focusing on one game at a time and make our best effort. You know, McCarron is saying he believes in the team. You know, you can see we're a good team and we just need to find that chemistry every night. And then Cracknell comes in and says, you know, I'm telling the guys, just keep playing the way you know you need to play and things will fall into place. And I just, I'm encouraged by that kind of positivity, despite all of the losses that these guys have sustained in recent weeks.
Yeah, that's right. And, the Rocket are tied right now in terms of points, 44 each with the Belleville Senators, with only the Devils below those two teams in the North Division. And the other four teams, the Marlies, the Comets, the Americans, and the Crunch are well up there. But Lavelle is 17 points out of second place. They're 17 points out of fourth place. They're kind of, to expect them to make that up is probably unrealistic. Now, you know, I know there are those people who say, well, things can happen to teams at the trade deadline with pieces being moved around, and holes being created in the big club. And you bring up a lot of guys to fill that. It's not mathematically impossible, but it's getting to that point. But I think rather than focus on that long-term goal, focus on the game-to-game, playing right. Mm-hmm. As David Brohl said, we win or lose, we need to play like we're playing and feel good about our game, and that
right.
will propel us to the end of the season. And that's an important message, and it's why you have veterans on the team to keep reinforcing those kinds of messages.
Absolutely. And I really think that Adam Cracknell has been a key piece to that puzzle, not only on the points side of things, which, you know, he did have a goal in Syracuse, but he's been through a little bit of a point slump, but especially on the leadership side, guys like him, guys like David Brohl, who you know, Thomas Ebbing and Chris Levier and Matt Petgrave, all three of them mentioned to us this weekend, in particular, that Cracknell and Broll are two of the guys that have really helped the new guys acclimate. In fact, there was a third Brampton call-up on Saturday in Syracuse. Luke Olivier Blaine was also called up as well. So, and as you said, the call-ups did very well. Now, Juleson was out of the line on Saturday night. I think that was just an illness. Chris Terry, Yannick Veya, Matt Taormina, and Nicky Petty all still day-to-day. So we'll see if any of them are back for tomorrow night's game in Belleville. Hoping, Rick, that some of them are back and that injuries aren't too serious. But it'll be interesting. This week, the team does have three games this week. They will be playing the Belleville Senators tomorrow night. I know they play the Marlies this week. And I believe they play the Penguins this weekend. I'd have to look for sure, but we will have full coverage of all of those things.
The
Hershey Bears. Yes. I knew it was someone close to me. So it's, again, not easy games. Playing the Marlies again is going to be, that's going to be a, they ought to have that circled on their calendar, because for Toronto to come into to Place Belle and Laval, they need to give them a piece, you know, a taste of their own medicine and show Toronto that they've got some pushback against what Toronto did to them at RICO a week and a half ago. Hershey has not been the powerhouse this season that they have been in past seasons. So if Laval is feeling good and feeling confident and can be opportunistic, they could come away with 2 points there. So that should be an interesting game to see. But right now, we actually want to talk about tomorrow night's tilt against the Belleville Senators. And he's patiently been waiting, but I'd like to welcome to the program for all of our listeners, our staff writer and head Belleville Senators correspondent here at the AHL Report, Mr. Joseph Whalen.
Hey, guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you, Joseph.
Absolutely. We're certainly happy to have you make your debut here on From the Press Box. And for those of you who don't know, or if you have friends who are Belleville Senators, Ottawa Senators fans, let them know that the AHL Report is offering full-time coverage of the Belleville Senators, thanks to Joseph's hard work this season. He's providing live game updates for every Belleville Senators game, home or away, as well as full game reports and recaps, which you can find on our website at ahl.report. It's been a lot of fun, Joseph, getting to follow along with your coverage. But the great thing is when Laval and Belleville play each other, then it's kind of like, you know, grudge match on the AHL Report, you know?
Yes, there's a lot of mudslinging, a lot of bad blood. No, of course not. But yeah, it's become a nice rivalry, I think. And it's shown on the ice as well between the two teams. So tomorrow night should be very interesting.
Well, especially as Rick mentioned, these two teams are tied in the point standing with the Rocket having one game in hand. So tomorrow night is kind of a key game for both teams. We've just been speaking about how depleted the Laval lineup is, but give us a little update on how Belleville's lineup is looking right now.
Well, there's been a lot of similarities in that regard, especially for Belleville. They've been without a lot of key players for most of the season. And just yesterday, Max McCormick was called up to Ottawa, so he will probably not be there. And Mike Blunden was suspended for 2 games. So right now they're going with 10 forwards. So barring a change, they have 10 forwards right now. So there might be something that changes between now and then. But yeah, it's not been a good go of it for Belleville with the injuries and everything like that, in a similar way that Laval has also struggled recently with injuries.
What would you say? Go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say, with struggling because of injuries and depleted lineups, Belleville has dipped into Brampton, Brampton Beast this year, and it's an interesting arrangement. The first year of the arrangement, the ECHL split affiliation, the Brampton Beast being affiliated with both the Laval Rocket and the Belleville Senators, and can you talk about the players that have come up from Brampton? And I guess I'm specifically interested in Marcus Hogberg, who has on kind of a weak Brampton team has had a pretty strong save percentage throughout the season in Brampton. Hasn't been able to maintain that when he's come up with Belleville, but has gone back and forth both times. So can you talk about Hogberg and then maybe some of the other players that have also come up from Brampton?
Yeah, well, he's obviously the main one that's been in Belleville and Brampton for a lot of the season. And he is, you know, he hasn't been able to really maintain what he's done in Brampton up at the AHL level. But, you know, a few nights ago in Rochester, he gets the first shutout in Belleville Senators franchise history. And then the next night, against Toronto, he gets absolutely shelled for six or seven goals. I believe he was in for all seven. But yeah, you know, it's been that kind of up and down when he's been up at the AHL level, and you know, it's been difficult for him to kind of get on any type of sustained momentum, because Belleville's been carrying, I mean, for the better part of the season, they've been carrying four goaltenders. So it's been difficult for him to get in there at the AHL level. And it's been interesting when he's been in there, because he's that prospect goaltender that a lot of Ottawa Senators fans want to see play more. And when you see him in a game against like Rochester, where he had the first shutout, you can see why.
Just going off of that as well, Joseph, you know, as you mentioned, that they've had kind of been a shuffling of four different goaltenders and things of that nature. Goaltending sometimes has been the issue, sometimes it hasn't been. What do you really see are, especially for Laval fans who are going to probably watch the game tomorrow night as well, what are the real strengths of the Belleville team, and where are the real weak spots?
Well, when they're playing a good four-line game and they're playing a strong competitive game, then they can score. It's that when they get into those games against teams like Toronto and Syracuse that are very high powered, that's where you see a lot of the issues, because they don't really have that individual skill level like those teams have. But when they're playing and four lines are really rolling, and that's when they're at their best. And I would say that their biggest weakness would be the fact that they take a lot of penalties, and they have the worst penalty kill in the league. So, I mean, say what you want about, you know, scoring goals, taking as many penalties as they do. I believe they're the only team in the AHL with over 900 penalty minutes. They have the worst penalty kill in the league. So, and to be fair, a lot of those also are 10-minute misconducts, game misconducts, 5 minutes for fighting here and there. They wouldn't be shorthanded, but they've still been shorthanded the eighth most in the AHL. So you're looking at a team that is taking untimely penalties and can't kill them off. And that's where the issues have really been, because 5-on-5, really the goalies have done a pretty good job for them, considering the team has been pretty depleted all year, and the defense most recently has been pretty depleted. The goalies have done a pretty good job. It's just, when they get into the penalty kill, that's when the issues start to arise for Belleville.
Rick, that sounds kind of familiar as far as a weak penalty kill. So I don't know where I've heard that before.
That's true. Absolutely. and it's probably Andreas Englund that's taking about 800 of those 900 penalty minutes.
I would venture to guess that him and Tyler Randall are pretty much neck and neck for that. That would probably be that's the fine line you walk with players that play a physical style like that. And Patrick Seeloff as well. you have those guys that play that physical style, that like to step up and make a big hit and try to change the tide of games. And you know, sometimes it doesn't really pay off, and they end up taking a penalty that maybe they shouldn't have taken. And that's been I say untimely penalties, but when you're sitting 30th in the league in penalty kill, all the penalties you take are untimely. So
that's very true.
That's right.
So you're saying we might have an entertaining game tomorrow night?
Well, I mean, Belleville tends to bring out the worst in their opponents in terms of nastiness. Of course, I think right now Syracuse is sitting second in the league in most penalties, and they've had a few games against Belleville that probably contributed pretty heavily to that.
Well, Joseph, you've been a tremendous addition to the team. Despite our differences and the curse that you put on the Minnesota Vikings, you've been a tremendous addition to the team. You joined us and prior to covering the Senators, you covered the St. John's Ice Caps, and we're our local for home games, our reporter in St. John's. As I understand, this sports journalism has been kind of a lifelong dream for you. And your first post was written when you were in the fifth grade, the first time you wrote about sports. You were pretty excited. When I contacted Memorial University and was asking about interns, and you jumped at it right away, and you did a great job providing recaps. Amy provided you some training, and you became a skilled interviewer for the scrums, and you've been a great addition to the team. And if there's somebody out there who's listening and says, "Oh, what is this Rocket Sports thing, and why would I want to get involved?" Maybe just if you can talk about your experience a little bit, talk about your experience.
Well, I mean, when I had seen that this had become, that I'd gotten this email, it was, like you said, I had to jump at it because it was a tremendous opportunity. And, you know, especially considering that was their last season, I felt like I had hit the jackpot in terms of being able to cover a team. And, you know, the experience itself, I mean, going to cover live sports events, there's nothing quite like it. I mean, being in that environment, especially when the Ice Caps were in the playoffs last year, and to have you guys coaching me all through that, I mean, you guys were fantastic for me. Like you said, I mean, interviewing was a little bit of a hurdle to get over, but when you have great coaches like you guys were for me, and you were giving me such great feedback all the time, it was something that you just pick up as time goes on, and you listen to the scrums that you guys did with Sylvain last season, and you would pick up on different types of things that you guys were doing and saying. And I speak of it so fondly to everybody that I talk about it to, because it was just such a fantastic experience for me to get to go and do that. It was awesome.
Well, we certainly. It is. I know. I'm kind of blushing here. My goodness. I can only echo what Rick has said in that your hard work, your commitment to your craft, and you're like a sponge. You love to learn. You soak up everything around you, I think that has really carried over very strongly with your Belleville Senators coverage this season. And it seems that you have a good following of people now from the Belleville crew that really follows along with what you're doing as far as their coverage. So stick tap to you, Mr. Whalen.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I was, I would just like to say though, I would also, Rick brought it up, and I have nothing to say, but I am so sorry to all the Minnesota Vikings fans. It's my fault. It is all my fault. It's not the fact that there was a third string quarterback in the game. It's not that. It's me. I brought my Raptors playoff luck I'm a diehard Raptors fan, and it's well documented that they have struggles in game one playoff games, and I believe that it had some direct correlation to the Vikings. So that's on me. And it's probably
Ed's
my fault.
Fine with me.
Yeah, because you benefited, yeah. The Eagles. Well, when we get our Raptors podcast and our Blue Jays podcast going, we'll be sure to involve you with that.
That would be great. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be sure to have you back on again before the end of the season to give us another update on how the Belleville Senators are doing. And we appreciate you coming on today. And it's going to be an interesting game tomorrow night.
All right. Thank you so much. I was looking forward to it.
All right.
Thanks, Jason.
All right. Take care. Well, that was a lovely visit from our friend and colleague, Mr. Joseph Whalen. Thank you to him again for joining us. I should also give Mr. Whalen's Twitter account. You can find his tweets for his Belleville Senator coverage all at the AHL Report. But you can also find him on Twitter at Joe Whalen 19. That's WHALEN. Joe Whalen 19 is where you can find him directly. If you have any questions about the Belleville Senators, he is your go-to guy. And we appreciate his hard work.
Absolutely.
All right. So we are moving along to some quick AHL news. First, Rick, I just wanted to hit the CCM AHL Player of the Week is Milwaukee Admirals forward Trevor Smith. He had quite a week last week in four games. The Admirals had four consecutive wins last week, and he tallied 2 goals and 5 assists in those four games for a 7-point week. And so he is the CCM AHL Player of the Week. So congratulations to Trevor Smith.
Congratulations.
Also wanted to, as Joseph mentioned, Mike Blunden was suspended for 2 games for an illegal check to the head of an opponent in a game against Toronto. And the AHL also announced another suspension today. Bridgeport Sound Tigers forward Steve Bernier has been suspended for 1 game for an elbowing incident against Syracuse. And the only other little bit of news that I just wanted to mention will be a familiar name for former St. John's Ice Caps fans. And that is, if you have not seen it, former Ice Caps goaltender Jan Denis announced his retirement from the sport of hockey yesterday after spending parts of 12 seasons in the AHL with an enormous number of teams, but most recently the St. John's Ice Caps. He has decided to hang up the skates. It was interesting to see some of the players that listeners are familiar with making public, you know, sending public messages on Twitter and whatnot to Jan, including Max Freeberg, who tweeted at him and said, "Best of luck. It was an honor to play with you." And Bobby Farnham said, "Legend, congratulations on an amazing career. Very lucky to have had the opportunity to play with such a great guy. Cheers to your retirement and best of luck." So really nice to see former teammates coming out and supporting Jan Denis on his retirement.
And great for him and his connection to the Montreal Canadiens. He had 2 stints with the AHL club, about 10 years apart, I would guess, first with the Bulldogs and then with the Ice Caps. And it was kind of people questioned the move at the time because last season the goaltending was supposed to belong to Charlie Lindgren and mm-hmm. Zach Fucali. Instead, Jan Denis was signed and served as Charlie's backup, got into 11 games, and it allowed Charlie to have the Ice Caps net and Zach to go down and play, a good portion of the games in Brampton, and he got a lot of playing time there. Jan Denis filled in nicely and was a good veteran backup to help to Charlie last year.
For sure.
And was solid when he was called upon.
And a genuinely nice guy. He was. He always had a smile and a hello off the ice as well. Really, really nice guy. So we wish him the best of luck.
Absolutely.
That brings us now to. I need to come up with some sort of fancy schmancy like intro music. It's all full of like bells and whistles and sirens and things for your Where Are They Now segment.
Wow.
Sirens, even.
Oh, that kind of stuff. Not sirens singing.
Well, it's your segment, so you can have whatever you want. So if you want siren songs, then we'll try to arrange that for you. What kind of journey are you taking us on today?
Well, I'm going to go back to the 2007 NHL entry draft, and it was a draft that was very successful for the Montreal Canadiens, and so it's a draft that is referenced over and over and over again. In that draft, number one overall was Patrick Kane. Number five was Carl Alzner, believe it or not, now with the Montreal Canadiens, who went to Washington in the draft. Number 12 overall was Ryan McDonagh, selected by the Montreal Canadiens. Then traded away to the disdain of most Canadiens fans. Number 13 in the 2007 NHL entry draft was Lars Eller. And then he was in the famous Halak trade, came to the Montreal Canadiens now, off to the Washington Capitals, where he's been playing very well and just signed a brand new 5-year contract with them. But the Canadiens in that draft, they picked up, as I said, Ryan McDonagh in the first round at number 12. They also had a second first-round pick at number 22, and they picked current captain Max Pacioretty.
Okay.
So that worked out pretty well for them.
Yeah.
Same draft. In the second round, they picked up P.K. Subban.
Alrighty.
And in the third round, the Canadiens selected Yannick Weber. Subban and Weber, both with the Nashville Predators, who just visited the Bell Center.
Mm-hmm.
So picking up McDonagh, Pacioretty, Subban, Weber, all full-time NHLers, currently a pretty successful draft. But
I'd say so.
And it's funny because you look down that draft, you get to the fifth round at number 132, the Carolina Hurricanes selected Chris Terry. Chris Terry.
Oh, okay.
20-goal scorer currently with Laval Rocket. And in the sixth round at number 179, the Buffalo Sabres picked Paul Byron in the 2007 draft. Really?
It's quite a list.
But you would never have known that the draft would be, the 2007 draft would be so successful for the Montreal Canadiens and some players that they went on to trade away to other teams, because mm-hmm. the media was rather singularly focused on a player. He went at number 20 in the first round, and the Pittsburgh Penguins selected him, and the Montreal media were just so disappointed. They went crazy that he wasn't picked up by the Montreal Canadiens, because he was one of those hometown guys, born in Mount Royal, Quebec, none other than Angelo Esposito.
Really?
Angelo Esposito. And
was Therrien the head coach of the Penguins at the time? I don't know my dates as far as, so I'm just looking for that Montreal connection there again.
2007.
Sorry, I didn't mean to like give you a detour on your journey here, but.
Yeah, you're disrupting my journey, and I don't happen to care much for Michelle Therrien.
That's fine. It was if you knew it was great. If you knew, great. If not, that's okay. Carry on.
Well, I mean, you know, not only was he born in Montreal, but he was a scoring star with Quebec Ramparts for three seasons. So that also right in your backyard. We've heard that before. And his first season as a 16-year-old in the Q, he had 98 points, 39 goals, 59 assists, and was second in rookie scoring, second to Claude Giroux.
Hey, I know that guy.
To make sure that you're still awake, I thought I'd throw Claude Giroux.
I'm awake. Hey. Fully engaged here.
And Esposito was playing on a line in the with Ramparts, on a line with Alexander Radulov.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. The one that Marc Bergevin let get away and is having a great season, tremendous season with Dallas.
Seems to be enjoying his time there.
Esposito was an offensive-minded player, great hands, gator, didn't have much on the defensive side of his game, but was from the Ramparts, the Penguins drafted him. He was, I think, at the time he was ranked among North American skaters first by Central Scouting. He dropped somewhat, and that was probably due to a decline in his production from year one to year two. But after that, you know, at that rookie season where he was just a phenom, his team won the Memorial Cup.
Okay.
So kind of fabulous rookie, lots of attention, Memorial Cup. And then in 2007 was picked 20th overall, first round by the Pittsburgh Penguins. So we go ahead from June of 2007 to February, the trade deadline actually in 2008. And I know there was a lot of chatter about what are the Penguins doing, particularly by Montreal media. They shipped out Esposito. Along with Colby Armstrong and Eric Christensen to the Atlanta Thrashers. But they were, the Penguins were in the middle of a good season, a cup run, and they, by trading out their young prospect in Esposito, they picked up Marian Hossa and Pascal Dupuis, who happened to play pretty major parts in their cup run, taking them all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals in 2008, which eventually they lost out to the Detroit Red Wings.
Oh, that's so sad.
So a few months after his NHL rights were traded, Esposito, his junior rights were traded by the Ramparts to the Montreal Juniors.
Okay.
And at that time, the juniors had just drafted Guillaume Afflin in the Q draft. You remember Guillaume Afflin?
Yes, I do.
Two years later, 2010, Afflin gets traded for Louis LeBlanc. But the juniors had Afflin, they had Esposito, and they were all set to go. So 2008-09, he started the season with the Montreal Juniors, had a good start. He was picked for the World Junior Championships. He goes to the 2009 World Junior Championships in Ottawa, and Canada gets to the gold medal game, and and Angelo Esposito scores the game-winning goal against Sweden in Ottawa. The Canadians went on to win that game 5-1, and so he celebrates a gold medal. Esposito does with the likes of John Tavares and P.K. Subban, and Jamie Benn was on that team. That was the string of five goals. That was the fifth in five straight golds for Canada.
Hmm.
And Angelo Esposito was a part of that. So he returned to the Montreal Juniors and promptly tore his ACL.
Oh.
And missed the rest of the 2008-09 season, his final junior season. So in 2009, the 2009-10 season, he started in the AHL, his first pro season. And he started with the Chicago Wolves, and he tore his ACL again. Same.
Oh, God.
Yeah, required a second surgery.
Oh.
So, yeah, things kind of went.
It's not doing so good.
Well, he was on top of the world,
yeah,
and projected for such a glorious NHL career, and you know, Montreal writers, the way they write, they were, you know, the words Guy Lafleur were breathed in the same sentence as Angelo Esposito.
Uh-huh.
So following that next injury-prone season, there was a trade in the off-season, and he went to the San Antonio Rampage. Then half a season there, he was traded to the Texas Stars. And, you know, after that, there was time in Finland, there was time in Italy. The last season he played in North America was the 2014-15 season, one game. He played for the Fort Wayne Comets in the ECHL and decided to not to continue. And went off to Italy, back to Italy, then the Czech League. The last time he played was the 2016-17 season in the Czech League. And so, I mean, he had two serious knee surgeries along the way. He had four concussions. Injuries were, physical injuries were a major issue, but also the mental aspect of being on top of the world and then not able to achieve the dream that you thought you're going to get to. And he never seemed to recover from that.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Well, and we talk so often.
Go ahead.
We talk so often, again, about how, you know, hockey changes, every day. And no player is guaranteed another day in the league. You just never know. And it's always hard to see players go through something like that, where through things that they can't control, everything changes in an instant.
That's right. And players sometimes have a real tough transition. And what do I do now? And we, we've talked about some of that, real terrible situations. Well, Angelo, his dad's a smart business. The family business is the Espositos have a grocery chain, independent grocery chain in Montreal. There's one in NDG that I used to frequent. So his dad's a pretty smart Italian businessman, and when Angelo was getting some sizable paychecks, his father took away some of that. much to the disagreement of Angelo, who said he had a long list of things that he wanted to buy, and they didn't include real estate, which is where his dad put some of that money in and squirreled some away. But now, today, Angelo is a Montreal landlord. He buys, he renovates, he rents out real estate. He's got about 40 housing units.
Wow.
Hochelaga area of Montreal. Yeah. And credits his dad for kind of stepping in and kind of knowing that he needed to prepare for his life after hockey, not knowing when that was ever going to come, but just as a backup. And so now his life is as a real estate landlord. He also he was at Selwyn, which is an independent boys' school in Westmount, and he helps out there as a skills coach.
That's great.
But a successful transition away from hockey when things didn't work out the way they were supposed to. It's a success story because of the forethought of his family, and so these transitional stories when they're a success are really positive and the kind of stories we want to present. And I appreciate. I have to mention that the tip for this story came from Jerome Berube. He's the head scout. He covers the queue, covers NHL prospects for Hockey Prospect. I call him Dr. J. I don't know if he appreciates that.
I don't know. He either really likes it or he's like, I don't know what that's about. But.
Yeah, I don't know what it's about. Yeah, I don't know why I've even started. But thank you, Dr. J, Jerome Berube. I really appreciate you bringing this story to us and glad to present it on Where Are They Now?
Excellent. Really good journey with Rick today on Where Are They Now? And of course, if you have a former Montreal Canadiens player or somebody who's in the system or a former prospect, or in this case, someone who was a target for Montreal fans to acquire, that you're interested in finding out where they have landed these days, you haven't heard their name in a while, just shoot us an email or drop us a line on Twitter or Facebook and say, hey, I have a name for you for Where Are They Now? Because we always enjoy taking suggestions. And you know, Rick just really likes doing a lot of deep diving research. So anything we can do to help him with that would be great. Well, I guess that now brings us to our final segment of the day. Yes, it's time for the top five today. Rick, it's the 13th. That means tomorrow's the 14th, which, as we all know, is Wednesday. Or as some people
right.
might, this week, some people may call it Valentine's Day.
I see.
So as we do occasionally wind our way away from sports sometimes, we inevitably always go to food. And so in honor of Valentine's Day, we're going to talk about some chocolate. Chocolate for Valentine's Day. That's our top five for this week. And
so these are ideas for our fans as they're doing their last minute preparations for Valentine's Day?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I would say it's, whether it's top five chocolates that are good to give on Valentine's Day or that you like to receive or just chocolate in general that you like, that you think is good.
Right.
Doesn't have to be, super specific. I'm sure you have rules, regulations, disclaimers, and and all sorts of guidelines for this category?
I do.
You do?
Yes, of course.
Really?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Do tell.
Well, first of all, this is a hard category for me.
It actually
because,
is.
No, it is. I'm not sweets and chocolate, and it's just not high on my list. But I'm a warrior here. I'll play along, and I came up with a list of great ideas for giving chocolate on Valentine's Day. However, there is an exclusion.
Really?
And yeah, well, of course. And those who were with us when we did our Halloween list, if they're paying attention, you know what's coming. But this is so important, it bears repeating.
Okay.
Always remember, I might like chocolate a little. I love peanut butter, but chocolate and peanut butter do not mix. Never.
That's right.
Ever, ever, ever do you mix chocolate and peanut butter.
But Reese's peanut butter cups are good.
They're horrible. They're just horrible.
Well, I mean, I actually have to agree that this, you know, I am my own worst enemy. I come up with the agenda for the show and I created a top five today that isn't the easiest for me to answer either, because I'm not a huge, like, there are a lot of women who just have to eat, I don't know, half a pound of chocolate every day because it's like the be all end all of the entire universe. And that's just not me. Like I have, I don't know, maybe I'll have a piece of chocolate once a month, something like that. And I have a sweet tooth. I have mega sweet tooth. You give me like cake, pie, donuts, strudel, Danish pastry. Okay, now I'm salivating. The list could go on for a very long time. So it's not that I don't have a sweet tooth. I'm just not a big chocolate person, but I do have some favorites of things that are good ideas for Valentine's Day. Before we reveal ours, though, do you know that since he was a special guest on the show today, Joseph Whalen also submitted his top five?
What a trooper.
Isn't he? I know.
Yep.
He drew the short straw coming on this week when we're talking about chocolate, not, you know, what's your power rankings? You know, it's what's your top five chocolate. So I'm going to dish out fun, completely intended. I crack myself up. I'm going to dish out Joseph Whalen's top five chocolates. And I think he actually had his own disclaimer guideline rules and regulations, and that it's more that it's not necessarily top five chocolates for Valentine's Day. It's just in general, top five chocolates for Joseph, pretty much. This is what he likes. Number five, Ferrero Rocher. You know, those little truffle balls that are covered with like pecans and
hazelnuts.
Come in those little.
I don't even know. Is it hazelnuts
Hazelnut. That's it. See, I don't eat them, so I forget. And they're like wrapped in like pretty little foil and everything. They seem to be very popular with people who eat chocolate quite often. So I will take Joseph's word on that at number five. Number four is a good old Twix.
Oh, you got to love a Twix bar.
Well, and I think we could modify this for Joseph in terms of the holiday. Isn't Twix one of the ones that comes out with like a special shaped Twix for every, like they have the Twix Christmas trees and the Twix Easter bunnies. So I'm sure they have like a Twix heart for Valentine's Day or something.
Okay.
Something like that. They have like Twix pumpkins at Halloween and I don't know. Number three is another kind of chocolate bar for Joseph, and that is Hershey's Cookies and Cream. We're getting fancy now.
Really,
I think I had one once. I think it's like a mixture of like white chocolate and regular milk chocolate with like little pieces of like almost like Oreo cookie kind of like in the middle a little bit. It's like cookies and cream. I think I had one once. again, trusting Joseph on this. His number two, now I do, Lindt makes very good chocolate. He has specifically Lindt white chocolate as his number two.
White chocolate. Okay.
Lindt white chocolate. And his number one top five chocolates is anything what's that?
No, I just, if people are taking notes, you can just send them to Joseph Whalen, St. John's, Newfoundland, and I'm sure he'll get them.
That's right. Ferrero Rocher, Twix, Hershey's Cookies and Cream, Lindt White Chocolate, attention Joseph Whalen, St. John's, Newfoundland. They'll just know exactly who it is, and it'll get right to him. Or you could just call up the number one spot and say, send everything you have to Joseph, because he says anything from the Newfoundland Chocolate Company. And I went to the Newfoundland Chocolate Company's website. Who knew?
Huh.
And they have these great chocolate bars that are wrapped. They have the George Street bars. So they have chocolate bars that are wrapped with wrappers that have all of the really like premium spots to go toss back a few pints on George Street. They have the row house bars, the famous, very colorful row houses. In St. John's. So they have a series of chocolate bars that have a different one of those row houses on the front of them. I very much like the Newfoundland Sayings chocolate bars, which are wrapped with wrappers that say, yes, bye, what are you at? And some shocking good. I particularly enjoy those. So apparently this is Joseph's number one chocolate spot. And so if you're in Newfoundland or visiting, it sounds like you should check them out. And we, of course, thank Joseph for submitting his top five. We want to hear yours as well. So hit us up on Twitter or Facebook or email at the AHL Report and send us your top five. That was a good list, Joseph. It was good. We should reveal ours. So what you got for number five?
I'm going to start simple. It's simple and meaningful, and a homemade gift is always appreciated. And so at number five, I have chocolate chip cookies. Bake up some homemade chocolate chip cookies.
Really?
And, put them in a box, put a bow on them, and that's a perfect, simple, chocolatey Valentine's Day gift.
That's very creative of you there.
Thank you very much.
I like it. My number five is actually what you shouldn't do for chocolates on Valentine's Day.
Right.
Don't buy anything that says Whitman's Sampler, Russell Stover, or Gertrude Hawk on it. Just don't do it. Walk away. Okay. Go spend $3 more on something that's just a little bit better. But please, no Whitman Sampler, no Russell Stover, no Gertrude Hawk.
Are those the heart boxes? The ones that come in the heart box?
The Whitman's is, yes.
Okay.
Yes, the Whitman's is. And there's nothing wrong with a big box of heart-shaped box of candy if that's what you want to buy your Valentine. Just go to, just step up the game a little bit. Like, get the Godiva one or something like that. It's just my recommendation. Number four. What you got at number four?
Number four, I have chocolate-covered strawberries. And, it came to mind because... And I must say, I've never had them. I've had chocolate-covered strawberries, but the commercials for Sherry's Berries, the chocolate-covered, the strawberries covered in chocolate, and they have different kinds, and some are fancy. But and as I say, I'm not doing a commercial for them because I have no experience. But on the commercials, they look tremendous. Those strawberries look big and ripe and juicy, and the chocolate on. So I'm going to add them to my list, even though I have not had them. They just look very, very good.
Tasty. My number four is chocolate fondue. Because why stop at strawberries? just dip everything under the sun in some melty liquid chocolate, and how can you possibly go wrong?
Hmm.
You can't.
All
pineapple,
right.
Banana, strawberries, pound cake. Oh, dip some pound cake in there. Woo! Nelly! Mm. Tasty.
Doritos.
You know, I would try it. I'm not ashamed to say that I would dip a Dorito in fondue chocolate just to find out what it tastes like.
Alrighty.
Before I go any crazier into the fondue, tell us what your number three is.
My number three, well, everybody has their opening. It's an unopen. Trying to hear it. But,
oh, wait. So, wait. Did you bring enough to share? Like, did you ship some to me and did you ship some out to, like, Joseph so he can partake?
I'll put them in the mail. Yeah, you might get them by Easter.
Okay.
This is leftover from Christmas, and it's Ghirardelli chocolate squares. This is milk chocolate filled with caramel, and but I mean everybody has their. Joseph said Lindt chocolate. Lindt is Swiss chocolate. Ghirardelli was out of San Francisco. Now apparently they're owned by Lindt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but you mentioned Godiva as kind of a premium brand of chocolate, right?
It's one of them, it, yeah. I mean, I'd put it up there with Lindt and Ghirardelli and whatnot.
Well, it's funny because Godiva Japan took out, it's happened in the last few days, took out full-page ads in all the Japanese newspapers. Telling Japanese women to stop buying chocolate on Valentine's Day. Stop it.
Okay. Stop it. Just the women.
You see, just the women. Well, because that's the thing. And here's what I wanted to get into. In Japan, Valentine's Day, it's only the women who buy chocolate on Valentine's Day.
Okay.
As it should be.
What?
No, they give the gifts of chocolate to their friends, to their colleagues, to their bosses.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
It's called Jira Choco. It's which roughly translates to obligation chocolate.
Here, I'm obligated to give this to you, so you better like it.
Right. And typically, a Japanese woman spends about $45 on obligation chocolate.
Okay.
So, Godiva Japan put this ad in the paper and said, "You know, this is an outdated custom. Let's get with the times. Let's end this. Let's end this obligation chocolate, this terrible burden for our women of Japan." And some people applauded and said, "Oh, isn't that nice?" But then, some economists and people who watch the market kind of got in and said, "You know what? When you buy obligation chocolate, you don't buy high-end chocolate." So the issue here is Godiva was saying, don't buy chocolate on Valentine's Day in an effort to undermine their competitors because they weren't receiving the business for this obligation chocolate. So instead, they're hoping that this $45 that you're going to save ending this practice of buying obligation chocolate is going to be put into more premium chocolate like Godiva to spend on your loved ones. You're closer. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite a. Okay. I don't know. That's. How about just let them buy chocolate if they want to buy chocolate?
Yeah, I think so too.
So that's your number three.
But I like this idea about women on a team buying chocolate for their colleagues and bosses, and I think that's a really good idea. We should bring that from Japan to North America.
You know, I'm really glad that Joseph is no longer, because the two of you would gang up on me about this, because I'm sure he will agree with you. I'll take that into consideration at my next executive meeting, which is like me. I'll put that on my agenda.
I'm gonna open my milk chocolate caramel square here.
Okay. Yeah, you do that.
I'd like to get on with number three.
Okay. Well, my number three is I'm a bit spoiled here where I live in Eastern Pennsylvania. Within a 20-minute drive in a couple of different directions, I have not one, not two, but three different privately owned, small business, handcrafted artisan chocolate shops where it's just family businesses that have their own chocolate recipes and make their own chocolate candies and truffles and all of those kinds of things. And so my recommendation at number three is that if you can find a place that makes homemade, handmade chocolates, that steps up the game a lot. They're usually, they just usually taste so good. And that's, I would actually imagine that's probably why Joseph likes the Newfoundland Chocolate Company. It's probably something similar. You get all the variety and you're supporting a local business and a local family. And, but they're usually very, very tasty too. So I'm putting artisan chocolates in there at number three for me.
Nice. You didn't talk long enough. I'm not finished this chocolate.
Well, I'll just go ahead then with my number two while you stuff your face over there, because my number two
was really good.
I'm glad you're enjoying it so much. I can tell you're really enjoying it. My number two is actually your number four. I echo the chocolate-covered strawberries. I can actually, and I'm not doing a commercial for them either, because unless Sherry and your berries, if you'd like to send me a box, I will gladly endorse your product, because I can actually attest to how good Sherry's berries are. I've had them once, and they are very good. They do come in all sorts of flavors and varieties and all sorts of things. But they're enormous. Like one berry fits in the palm of your hand. I don't know where she gets her strawberries, but they're gigantic. And there you can get all sorts of different toppings on them and things like that. I like the pretty basic ones. So Sherry's Berries is very good. I just love chocolate covered strawberries. And actually the one local homemade chocolate shop that's near my house, which is my favorite one of the three, they make fresh chocolate covered strawberries like every day and sell them, and they're delicious. So I recommend chocolate covered strawberries any day of the week. Doesn't have to be Valentine's Day.
Mm.
Are you finished? Are you finished? Well, you're up.
Caramel square. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an awful
at number
big
two,
caramel square.
It was pretty good.
That's good.
I'm bringing in props to help the seg. At number two, and for this one, you have to listen to every word that I say, because each word is important.
Okay.
Macadamia nut short cookies dipped in milk chocolate.
Macadamia nut shortbread cookies dipped in milk chocolate.
That's right.
That sounds delicious.
Tremendous. And macadamia nuts are good on their own, coming mm-hmm. from Hawaii. This is from a company called Big Island Candies in Hawaii. I had a friend in Hawaii that used to send me these from time to time. They are unbelievable. Their macadamia nut shortbread cookie, and half of it has been dipped in this very good milk chocolate.
Nice.
The cookies are. Look them up online, and order them up. You will not be disappointed. And would make an absolutely fabulous, very unique and fabulous gift on Valentine's Day.
For sure. And so what was the name of that again?
Big Island Candies in Hawaii, and they have macadamia nut shortbread cookies dipped in milk chocolate.
Nice. All right, well, that brings us to the number one. My number one is also, oh gosh, but I don't know what the name of it is. I'd have to update our listeners because I don't know the name of it. But my number one favorite chocolate, there is, if you are ever in New York City and you go to Rockefeller Center where the skating rink is, where at Christmas time the big Christmas tree is, just off of the skating rink, as you're walking back out to the street, there's kind of this large walkway that you walk down, has all sorts of landscaping and things. And on either side of it, as you're walking away from the rink, there are both sides of those buildings are lined with all sorts of fancy shops and whatnot for the tourists. There's a chocolate shop on that little section right off the skating rink that a good friend of mine, her name is Jen, took me to once when we were in the city. And she said, there's only one thing that you get when you go in this shop, and we're going to go in and we're going to buy some and we're going to eat them immediately. They make, so, you know, plenty of places make truffles, and your truffles can be filled with, you know, it's a nice big chocolate truffle, whether it's milk chocolate or dark chocolate. And it's filled with all sorts of things, you know, whether it's hazelnuts or bourbon truffles or rum truffles or vanilla cream truffles and those kinds of things. Well, this particular chocolate shop makes champagne truffles. And I don't mean champagne flavored. I mean, you bite into it and an entire gush of champagne fills your mouth. It is the most decadent thing I have ever tasted in my life. They're outrageously expensive. I think we only bought four truffles. Like, we each ate two of them, and that we were like, okay, we're going to need to like hitchhike home because we have no more money left. But so delicious and so unique. I actually do not know the name of the chocolate shop, but if you can find something really unique like that, I would say champagne truffles, find them. You will not be disappointed.
Wow. That sounds very unique, sounds very decadent.
Oh, it is.
So, yeah, if you can present that side. I'm just a simple guy with simple tastes, so I'll present the other side for our listeners.
Uh-huh.
And back... one of our earlier top five lists, I had pie for kind of every, I don't remember which top five list, but it was pie.
And, I think you've had pie in every top five, even if it was about hockey.
Well, maybe that's
pie.
But what accompanied the pie in every case?
Whipped cream.
It was whipped cream. Exactly. And so I had to find a way of combining chocolate and whipped cream for my number one.
I know what you're doing.
A simple guy with simple tastes on Valentine's Day would make up some hot chocolate.
Oh, that's not what I was thinking. Some hot chocolate.
Hot chocolate. Now, with your hot chocolate, you might add some extra ingredients. You might add some Bailey's, you might add some amaretto, you might add some Frangelico. And you top it off with the rather large dollop of whipped cream, and then you get that caramel drizzle and you drizzle it over the whipped cream. And that,
my
to
goodness.
Me, sounds like a great, very simple, but a wonderful Valentine's gift.
That's not simple. That's like eight ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But it's pretty tasty. It sounds pretty tasty. Well, there you have it, folks. That's our special top five chocolates for Valentine's Day. We'd love to hear yours. I know it's not hockey related, but hey, you know, sometimes you just have to be different. And we had Joseph Whalen's top five in there as well. We appreciate him sending his in. So let's hear from you as well. I know that we went a little long today, but we had a full show today, Rick. It was a really good one. Lots of great information we covered. And it should be fun to see what the Laval Rocket and Belleville Senators do tomorrow night and for all the games this week.
Three home games for Laval, and they had a rough time at home, but we said this before, if they want to make any headway, this is where they need to start, is at home. So we look forward to the coverage of those games.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for listening to this week's edition of From the Press Box. I'm your host, Amy Johnson. Of course, you can find us on Twitter at the AHL Report. You can find Rick on Twitter at All Habs. You'll find me at Flyers Rule. And be sure to, of course, tune into all of our other podcasts here on Rocket Sports Radio. We've got Habs Unfiltered, Have a Listen, From the Press Box, of course, and Habs 360, which is our live podcast with Chris G and Rick every Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. Until next week, next Tuesday, same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you here next week.